Hello there. Just a thought. As we're getting closer to the holiday and gift buying season, keep in mind soccer90.com. It is a great place to shop for any type of gear for all your favorite clubs and teams from all over the world. Looking for a messy PSG jersey? A Chelsea jersey with Pulisic on the back. How about a Ronaldo Manchester United jersey? Got it. Soccer90.com has shirts and gear from clubs and national teams from all over the world. And if you happen to be up by Frisco, go check out the actual Soccer 90 store at Toyota Stadium right next to the Hall of Fame. It's a great place to visit and see all this stuff in person. And please don't forget, when you're done shopping at checkout, use the code KICKAROUND to get 25% off your order. Go check it out, soccer90.com.
It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is The Tick. We're just kicking it around. Now, here's two guys that still dream about having cool soccer hair. Andy Swift and Peter Welton.
Hi-de-ho, P1s. Welcome to a World Cup qualifying podcast edition of The Kick Around. Normally, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sport Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket, where, by the way, we will be back live for the first time in a while this coming Saturday. And don't forget, you can also find us on our website, thekickaround.com. For you, the good P1 that loves to sit around and talk soccer and all that implies. Hi. Yes, you're listening to this podcast. You're probably subscribed, so you know it's me, but with me, and it's just him, just the two of us, my soccer-talking BFF, the amazing Andy Swift. Andy, how are the Maple Leafs doing?
The Maple Leafs are doing just fine now. They just got their second goal, and they're up on Panama, but that's not the story right now because the U.S. game just ended, and congrats to you, and not just because your national team won, but your soothsayer abilities continue to impress, as you predicted the 2-1 scoreline.
And a Stefan Softy.
Yeah, right, yes, that. Quickly, you got that one out of the way very quickly.
I did. Yeah, by the way, just to make you even more happy, Andy, since we've talked, Canada has scored a third. They're up 3-1 on Panama in the 73rd.
Well, there you
minute.
Go.
Yes, I look, so a couple things out of the way before we get started. First off, we've been goofing with different formats and styles of doing this thing over the last few weeks. Some of them are more me asking people questions and kind of group talk. I just thought we'd just take it back to the old simple days, Andy, of just you and me talking like we normally do, talking about this stuff, because it's been a long, has it been almost 7 days now since the second window's taken place? This feels like it's been going on for a month.
Yeah, and so many games, like three games in that short amount of time, too, and so many storylines as well. I mean, this do you get the feeling or is your impression that the U.S. and this is not new, but it just seems that it was heightened this window. The U.S. soccer, the national team following, especially on Twitter, is so schizophrenic in their approach to how they feel about this national team and individual players, too. Game to game, half to half. We're all over the map on what we feel and what we think of Berhalter and what we think of the national team and where we're headed.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I say all these things at the risk of sounding like a old man splaining, but I do feel like there is a significant percentage of the U.S. soccer fan base that are relatively new to following and getting involved in World Cup qualifiers. And I think expectations aren't always set properly. I remember when I first started following the U.S. men's national team and they were playing minnow nations, you know, when they would play an El Salvador or a Bahamas or whatever it is, I was like, how are we not smoking these guys, right? Like, I didn't expect that against Mexico or Costa Rica, but I do feel like that's a bit of what's going on, and what you're sensing, Andy, is that there is
insecurity.
Insecurity, but the technology, social media, the ability to communicate and share thoughts and express opinions blindly or anonymously or whatever. A very small percentage of people can create a very, very large storyline and narrative that maybe isn't there or not. This is a weird time. I think you and I, as people that have been, did we say this is like our seventh World Cup cycle that we've been through?
Yeah.
And what I really genuinely and earnestly mean this when I'm, you know, tweeting about this stuff or telling it to somebody. It's like, look, this just is never going to be as easy as you think it should be. And by the way, you're probably right. It should be easier. It just never is. And that opening goal that happened tonight against Costa Rica is an exactly perfect example of what you and I have seen happen, not just to the U.S., but to any CONCACAF team in World Cup qualifying over the last however many years we've been watching this.
Yeah, shoot, it happened to Canada today. You know, they went down very early within the first 5 minutes, a known goal against a Panamanian team that was not rotating. We'll talk about rotations a lot, I think, in this podcast. But yeah, anything can happen. But, you know, when it's all said and done, after these three games and after this 2-1 result today, and I think some people were hoping for a statement win today. But what is a statement win? I mean, they dominated the game. They scored two goals. They took the 3 points and six from the window. We should be happy, right? I mean, this ultimately is good, right?
It is good. And a little bit of context for people. Prior to this set of games that happened tonight, there have been 20 CONCACAF World Cup qualifier games so far. In all of those 20, only two away teams have scored more than one goal. Only five of the 20 games, listen to this, only of five of the 20 games has a team won by two or more goals. Almost all of them, but 15 of them have been 1-0 draws or otherwise, right? And 12 of those have had clean sheets in them. Five of those were 0-0 draws. So when you really begin to look at the region as a whole and how the games go out, there are very few games where somebody is just taking it to the other. And that's something I think everybody should keep in context, even when you're playing at home. You know, Mexico is playing at El Salvador tonight, and I think that game is going to be bonkers. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Mexico drops one tonight.
Yeah, especially did you see some of those images of the fan base, the supporters, the Salvadorian supporters just camped out
all
outside
night
of the Mexico team hotel, just making all kinds of racket and noise through the night.
Yeah.
So it's very CONCACAF. Yeah, even today, you know, it was a one goal win, like you said. Very few larger than two goal wins we've seen so far in this CONCACAF qualifying round. Today, it felt like once they tied it, didn't it feel to you, and I think, you know, we texted about this to each other, it felt like it was a 3-1, 4-1 win coming, and it just didn't materialize because it's not easy at the end of the day. And very easily, Costa Rica could have tied this as well. They had one or two chances that if they put away, this game ends up in a draw.
Well, the penalty kick, right?
Pardon me?
The penalty kick that didn't
get the PK,
called.
Even if you don't think that was a PK, I mean, it was, but even set that aside, that was a clear opportunity they should have put away independent of that.
So it is a yes, I completely agree. And I don't want to spend too much time, you know, blathering on about specific games because I just finished watching it and I haven't completely thought through, reviewed it in my head completely. But what I do think was interesting, my big takeaway from this game was, it's interesting to watch the U.S. under-23s play an over-30 Costa Rican team. And those weird moments where literally U.S. kids are running down Costa Rica old men from 15 yards behind to take the ball away from them. And that happened a lot in this game. That is not going to be the norm in this situation. But my biggest surprise, and the thing that I was, you know, when people want to talk about Berhalter's odd decisions, I could not believe he had made a switch at goalkeeper. Zach Steffen instead of Matt Turner, who I think has been outstanding in these two prior games. I was shocked to see him make the change. Zach Steffen has only played in 13 official games for Manchester City since the beginning of the 2020 season, and only two of them, an EFL Cup game and an FA Cup game for Man City this season. The last one was in September, and the one prior to that was August. And I just, man, I thought that was going to come back to haunt them, and boy, sure enough, it did right off the bat.
So it's interesting to try to figure out why Berhalter went with Stefan. Obviously, he played in Columbus, and I don't know if that has something to do with it. Clearly, Berhalter obviously believes in this rotation theory, and which is he needs to do it. You need to rotate players, but goalkeeper seems to be the one position where you might and probably should not be doing that. The other thing to think about is this. We're a year out, essentially, right, from World Cup 2022. Now is about the time, with 1 year left to prepare, that you need to set who your number one keeper is, and also really your two center backs. You need to have those three playing well together, and now is the time you need to start figuring that out. And so this is another reason why I can't figure out why he went with Zach. And he looked tense early on, did he?
Oh,
he did, right?
Yeah, and I thought, you know, the goal was one. The start, if you go back and rewatch the first minute of the game, which it won't surprise you to find out, Andy, I've done that, is that whole sequence largely starts because a long ball is played out of the back. Pepe pressures one of the defenders, and they play a long ball out of the back that for his very first engagement with a soccer ball in a World Cup qualifier, Chris Richards, of all things, misjudges the ball and it goes over his head. That's how that whole thing turns into a dangerous moment. And then there's some kind of calamity that happens after that with Dest and so forth. But at the end of it, that resulting kind of weirdo shot from Fuller, I have a feeling Zach, the one that Zach missed, Turner saves that, because we've seen Turner's cat-like reflexes save those types of things before. I thought Stefan did fair with trying to clear the ball initially with his head after Richards missed it, but I do think at the very end of it, that's the soft one I was a little bit worried about. I thought the soft one was him going to be dawdling on the ball and an attacker coming and stealing it from him or something, because you know, I saw in several different places people suggesting that the reason why Berhalter would make this change is that he thinks Stefan is better with his feet and helping build out of the back, because that may be Turner's weak spot if he, you know, more than anything else. I don't particularly think Stefan's good, but remember, Stefan's the backup keeper at Manchester City, for goodness sake. He's not goalkeeper.
Look, this is not about being anti-Stefan.
Right.
This is about a keeper in the zone right now, because Turner has really been playing well in this one short 1 week window. It's almost like in hockey, you know, you have a hot keeper in the playoffs, a hot goalie in the playoffs, you kind of ride him. And I'm not saying, okay, now permanently change to Turner and forevermore he's the number one no matter what happens down the line, but in this window, he's just the hot hand. In my opinion, you stay with him. Now, you know, the rotation, I guess we should bring up the rotation issue and what you think of Berhalter's rotation strategy. You do need to rotate, right? That
yes.
is clear. I mean, I think we all agree player rotation needs to be a part of how you prepare for this window. Now, you can rotate one of two ways. You can go team A, then team B, then team A, which is kind of what Berhalter did. Or you can go hybrid A, B, A, B, A, B in three games and kind of give guys 65 to 75 minutes, two or three games, that kind of thing. You know, like a balance every game. Some people would say that that's a little bit more effective for continuity, because if you go A, B, A, that B team doesn't have the continuity to, I guess, play effectively and play the system well, because they haven't really been plugged in.
Yeah, this is the most interesting and different aspect of this particular World Cup cycle, are the three-game windows. We've not seen this before, at least not that I remember. Am I correct in saying that?
This is all COVID-related.
Yeah, so it clearly puts strains on teams in really weird ways. And, you know, one of the large driving talking points for Berhalter has been, in theory, this level of depth. And, you know, I'm not going to say anything here that somebody that's listening to this probably hasn't heard 15 or read in 15 different places since the Panama game, but it was Berhalter's choice to make wholesale changes, seven changes, especially with a team this young and with so many guys that were really kind of new to this whole experience or never in it before. I just was too much. And I think that it going forward is going to have to be the way that he thinks about this, is that instead of maybe, except for maybe the Mexico game, which is the first game up next, I think on the 12th of November, he's just going to have to figure out how does he sprinkle in his best players with a little bit of this other stuff so that when he gets to game two and game three, he can make these changes and do this rotation without putting himself in the situation he put himself in Panama.
Yeah. Now the next window will only have two games. So that'll be it won't be as important, but the issue is, even if you look, you can't put everything on Berhalter's shoulders either. Right. And even if let's say the ABA rotation philosophy is the right one, the players, the B players have to respond, even if it's tactically not as efficient, you have to show some energy and some physicality, and you have to win your 50s and you have to get stuck in if you're that middle group, right? Because mm-hmm. you haven't played. And that, I think, was the biggest issue that we saw in the game in Panama, is that the B team, I hate to call it the B team. I mean, those guys playing for the first time in the window, they should have shown more energy, I think.
Yeah, Kellen Acosta is a great example, who, by the way, had some outstanding play in really important games in the Gold Cup and Nations League. Had just really a brutally poor game in Panama. And, you know, he had a significant turnover that led to a Panamanian chance. And, you know, he admitted so after the game. There were a lot of players that just were flat in that game. And that's where, you know, some people will say, look, it's on the players to show up. Some people will say, well, that's a byproduct of a lot of players playing together for the first time and struggling with the fact that there are seven changes in the team. Those are the things that I think Berhalter, who still is relatively new at this to some degree, has got to figure this stuff out and handle it better. But that's the big lesson learned from this particular window, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. The other issue that I think was really highlighted in that game in Panama, and a little bit today, because, you know, Costa Rica scored their goal in the first minute, right? First 2 minutes, is that this team has, and throughout this World Cup qualifying cycle, has been coming out flat in the first half. And so is that on the coach? Is that on the coach? Why are they so flat to start every game?
Yeah, I don't know. And it is one of the weird oddities. And again, is that a byproduct of youth and inexperience and just being a little odd in the moment? I mean, the Jamaica game, which, you know, ultimately ended up being just fine and everybody left.
But you have some guys. Yeah, youth is part of the issue. And this team is going to continue to learn, right? I mean, this is today was the youngest ever national team side.
It was ridiculous.
And, yeah, I know. It's crazy. And we'll talk more about that here in a little bit. But so they're going to continue to learn and they're going to get better and all that. But you have some guys now starting games that are coming out flat that have been in very big, have played in very big games, have played, you know, Champions League games, and have played in the biggest games in the biggest leagues in Europe. And there's no excuse for that. So I'm just wondering why that is now. It's 9 games now where they come out flat to start off the game.
Yeah, I think prior to this game, the U.S. had not scored in the first half in 8 games, I think.
8 games. So this was the 9th game. Yeah. At least they scored in the first half today. Now, credit to them. After they go down 1-0, they did turn things around. And then from then on, it was all U.S. with...
Yeah,
with Costa Rica having some pretty good opportunities here and there that if they put away, this game could have gone south. But, you know, at the end of the day, the team did turn it around and they actually played well, right? I mean, with the exception of not being able to maybe make the right choice there with the last pass, I think the team played well.
The national team has not been good at breaking a low block in some time. And that's really one of the hardest things for any team to do, especially national teams, because you don't really have the opportunity to train through that as a team and figure out the sequences and where everybody's supposed to go. Twelman, I thought, made a really good point tonight when he was talking about, you know, on kind of an opportunity, three people going into the box, all kind of making the same run or at least same directional mm-hmm. run and not putting mm-hmm. any kind of variety into it. And yeah. I thought that was a really good observation, because that's one of the things that I think is a bit of experience and a bit of just, you know, Berhalter figuring that stuff out to make them a little bit more dangerous. Here's the thing. There is such a large swath of the Costa Rica game tonight where the U.S. just looked like a bunch of ballers goofing around on a pickup game, just bossing the other team.
And you know what it looked like? It's like we play pickup soccer with older guys our age. And let's say you're at the park playing with the guys your age, and suddenly this young group of guys, hey, do you guys want to play a game? And then they just completely kick your ass.
Right. Well, like I said earlier, there were so many weird, I mean, weird's not it. There were impressive moments. Well, let's take the really good opportunity for Costa Rica, where a bad pass between Robinson and Richards happens, and the mm-hmm. ball breaks loose to Brian Ruiz, who's like a billion years old, and Robinson, who is, what is he? Is he, Miles has got to be what, 15 yards behind him? And not only does he catch up, he takes the ball from him at the top of the box.
On a diagonal run too. It wasn't just north-south. He had to diagonally catch up to him.
And we saw that multiple times. I saw McKenney chase some people down. I saw Aronson chase some people down. That was real. You know, you and I were texting back and forth, and that was where I was thinking, okay, maybe this turns into a 3-1-4-1 game, but Costa Rica just kind of used their experience and, kept everything tight, and the U.S. continued to struggle with that. And I do think that's going to continue to be an ongoing theme for Berhalter, which is how does he create a team that figures out how to get past that low block?
Yeah. Like today, it's almost as if you allowed Costa Rica to just keep possession and then countered them. I think it could have been 4-1 because they're so much more athletic, younger, more athletic, more physical. And I don't think Costa Rica could have kept up with a U.S. counterattack. So I think when they go back to Costa Rica, I mean, you know, you have other factors at play when you go on the road. So maybe this won't happen, but it's almost like if the U.S. can just counter when they play in San Jose, they might be able to open up things and score goals in bunches when they play this old team.
That's a really good point. And it makes me wonder, Andy, you know, when people ask me, well, if they fire Berhalter, if it was a different coach, what would another coach do differently? And I wonder what you think about the concept of just somebody else coming in there and just kind of simplifying everything. I do still think that Berhalter, while he's dialed the difficulty level way back in terms of what he's asking the team to do, that Bruce Arena quote about how Berhalter was coaching the national team like a club team, I thought was really smart, back at the beginning of this whole thing. Just somebody coming in and simplifying the team and asking those guys just to play a more simple tactical style that maybe accentuates the ability for them to counterattack and use some of their athleticism.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, particularly when you're playing, when you're having to rotate. I hate to keep using that word because it's kind of the word du jour in this window is rotation. But when you're having to plug in so many guys and you have to, you know, put out three different lineups and rotate guys, it just, when you overcomplicate things, it just makes things a lot more difficult for the guys on the field, I think.
From the three games, and just to refresh everybody's memory, the first was the U.S. 2-0 win against Jamaica. In Austin, which, as Andy alluded to, did not start very well and was kind of shady until the team came out and just started playing better against a pretty poor Jamaican team. Then the loss in Panama, which, by the way, was the first time the USA has ever lost to Panama in a World Cup qualifier. That game was frustrating. And then tonight's 2-1 win over Costa Rica. Any particular overarching theme from this three-game window for you outside of the rotation thing that we've talked a little bit? I'm wondering, anything else you've picked up on?
I think it's inconsistency, and maybe it is related to the overcomplication that he's trying to instill on the team. But because in Jamaica, we saw a poor first half. Then the second half was maybe the best half we've seen not just all window in this cycle. And then a game where you didn't think they could play any worse than they played in the first half against Honduras. Remember the last window that first half against Honduras? They were actually worse against Panama than they were in that first half against Honduras. Then the first 10 minutes today, not good. And then they turn it around and play 30 minutes of really good soccer to end that first half. And then the second half was intelligent and maintaining, you know, holding the lead. And I think it was a fair half, but that's a lot of inconsistency game to game.
One of the things, maybe you have some particular insight into this with your CONCACAF relationships. We saw in the Jamaica game right off the bat, the U.S. Get on the bad end of a questionable non-call in the red card for the dog show right off the start. And then there was a second one later in the game that I didn't think was as controversial as many people do. But for the sake of this conversation, let's just say that U.S. got on the bad side of some decisions there. Today, they got on the good side when Chris Richards got very lucky that he did not get called for a penalty kick, because replays showed that was a clear penno right off the spot. But the question is, why isn't VAR part of these World Cup qualifiers? That seems ridiculous considering it's 2021 and this is CONCACAF.
Yeah, so the and I think you've heard this too, it's what we've been told, and I don't know anything beyond this, is that not all stadiums in the region can support VAR. And I don't think it's the stadiums that are really playing in this cycle. They might be referring more to those in the Caribbean that just don't have the infrastructure.
But is it because they couldn't do them in the earlier rounds? They don't use it? I mean, why couldn't they have just done it in the final? Because I'm looking at all these teams that are in this last group.
It seems like they could. And I wonder this too, Peter, is I was thinking about this as I was watching today's game. It didn't, I mean, I'm sure they've thought of this, but, you know, there might be a good reason for, like, they can have VAR Central at CONCACAF headquarters in Miami.
Yeah.
You don't have to have, like, a VAR truck at every stadium or a VAR room. Just set up cameras that feed into VAR Central. I guess maybe that's difficult because they play multiple games all at once, and it'd be hard to set up for. I don't know.
That's how the Premier League does it. All of those videos.
They have VAR Central?
Yeah, everything is shot back to the Premier League headquarters in London.
It's like the NFL does that too, right?
Yeah.
Baseball does that.
And that seems how that should be done, but I don't know. And again, it clearly, because I had, I had forgotten about the Jamaica thing until somebody pointed it out to me. Look, over the course of this series, that's going to work for and against the United States, and just be prepared for it. And be prepared for it to probably work against the United States more often than not, based on history, that bad calls go against us, and now VAR is not here to save our ass. But today, it did seem to work in their favor. It's been a weird three-game window. Go ahead.
But weird for you because it's just so up and down, I guess.
Roller
coaster of emotions.
Yeah, I guess my big takeaway is there are very clear moments where I feel like Berhalter is making progress with this team, and then there are very clear moments where I feel like I'm not quite sure Berhalter himself is making the right amount of progress as a head coach of a national team. In the way that I would like to see him do that. Again, it's this concept that I feel like he just overcomplicates things too much. I think he's still doing that to a degree. But then again, there are, like today, and maybe this is just a byproduct of the opposition showing up with I think 9 of the 11 guys that started were 30 or older. And then did you see how old those guys were they rolled out as substitutions? When Saborío is a guy that I swear I haven't seen him play soccer. It feels like in 10 years.
Yeah, is he 39 or something?
He said he just about turned 40, yeah.
Golly, and these are the guys going at the end to try to save the game for you.
Yeah.
Why are they doing this? Why are they not playing their younger generation?
Well, you're the CONCACAF expert. I was expecting you to tell me the answer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think a lot of people are asking this, including a lot of people in Costa Rica. And you know, Costa Rica, out of all those Central American countries, has the best infrastructure for the national team. They have a great training facility. They reinvest all this money that, you know, they generate from going to World Cups. Mm-hmm. They reinvest back into the program, into development. So they're developing players at a better rate than Honduras and El Salvador and the other Central American countries. Yet they're not playing these guys in this cycle. And I don't know if it's the seniority, you know, like the Keylor Navas being one of those guys. And, you know, goalkeepers age differently, and you can stick with an older goalkeeper for a lot longer than you can field players. But I wonder if they're having a say in this and they're just saying, look, we want our last hurrah. We want our last chance to get to one more World Cup. I don't know.
One of the other questions that I think makes sense for us to talk about is the performance of Ricardo Pepi, who continues to just kind of climb the charts, as they say, which started off with his two-goal performance in Austin, which, by the way, is now the house that Pepi built, it feels like, against Jamaica. And then tonight he doesn't score, and he has a couple of opportunities. The header, I thought, was, you know, the one header off the really good cross was a difficult one. And then the cutback, I thought if he finishes that goal where Hoppy saves it and it comes to Pepi and Pepi makes that just brutal cutback to his right foot, but the defender caught up to it. Man, I thought if he finished that, the world's going to catch on fire. It was ridiculous.
So When he mishit the header, what was the first thing you thought about? Did you think about the goal he scored against Jamaica?
Oh, yeah, because it was very similar.
That's the first thing I thought about, because he was so, it's not clinical, but it was such a good, intelligent touch with his head when he scored that first goal against Jamaica. I mean, it was exactly how they teach you to head that ball in that situation, the spot, the pace, everything, technique, right?
Yep.
And then, so today we didn't get that. And I think what we're seeing from Pepi by game three is a very tired Pepi. Because today he didn't have a bad match, but we've seen him play better. Now, one thing I did see, though, and I don't know if you saw it, and maybe it's just me being overly defensive about Pepi, and, you know, he's our child, you know, but there were three or four times when I felt teammates could have gone to Pepi where he was an option and they looked the other way and they chose not to go to him.
I saw a little bit of that myself. You know, he'd make a checking run and put his hand out like, hey, give me the ball. And they didn't do it. You know, there was that one of the best sequences was where somebody finally did that. It was between, I guess it would have been on that side. It would have been between Weah, Dest, and Pepi. And somebody finally played it to Pepi. And Dest played it to Pepi. And Pepi put this deft little touch to put the ball in behind that Weah then gave to Dest. And that was the kind of thing I think you're speaking of exactly, that we would like to see them give him more opportunity to do. There is a guy named John Mueller who writes a really, really good newsletter called Space, Space, Space. And at the end of the game, he posted a tweet that it was the bravest tweet of all time, which was, it said essentially, Giassi Zardes is playing better than Ricardo Pepi, who, by the way, had already scored two goals in the game. And it was an interesting comment because there was a part of me that agreed with him, but it also flies in the face that Zardes had missed a couple of opportunities and is Giassi, who everybody likes to crap on. And then he subsequently wrote an entire newsletter specifically showing what he's talking about, which is spacing, making the right runs, doing the right kind of pressing. all these things that Zardes is really famous for, and then the one thing he's infamous for, which is just really poor finishing in the most opportune of times.
Right.
And you have to like juggle this thing, which is what's, you know, obviously scoring a goal is the most important thing, but in many ways, creating the opportunity and being part of the construction of the of creating those opportunities is equally important. And that's maybe where the, again, he's 18 years old.
Yeah, Andy, that's, you know, exactly what I was going to say is long term, if you're a fan of Pepe, then you're not worried, because what can you learn? You having that goal scoring instinct, that you either have that or you don't. He has that.
Clearly. Yeah.
The other part is something that you learn with experience and with time and with good coaching.
And I think you and I, as somebody, and Buzz specifically, because Buzz has been watching Ricardo a lot longer than you and I have, we can all attest to the fact that the things that he typically has not been strong at, hold up play, checking back for a ball, those types of things, those are all things you and I can all attest to have improved dramatically over the last, hell, just 18 months, two years.
From Pepe?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You see it game to game, and he's also gaining more confidence. And that confidence also makes him a better player in that regard, because anyway, not to get into tactical minutia, but we saw it today too. I mean, he had I think his tactical awareness today was not poor.
No.
But, you know, I'm not a tactical, you know, expert. So, you know, I watch a game like a layperson, and I see him making good runs. I see him being on an option. And I just, today what I saw was like, he wasn't maybe used as much as I would have liked, but you know, who knows why, maybe there were good reasons for that, but he's tired though. You can tell, right? You can tell he's a little tired.
Yeah, he's put on some miles this year, but you know, he's 18. He can do it. Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, Alexi
Lalas, he's a punk kid. He can do it.
I don't know if you saw a podcast with it was Alexi's podcast where he's anti-rotation. He wants to see, and I don't know if he's doing a bit or what, but he wanted to see guys go all three games, and you know, maybe not 90 all three games, but you know, he wants his 11, and he wants his 11 to play three games. I don't know, man.
Look, there's a part of me that understands that line of thinking. I just don't think it's realistic.
Yeah, and look at Panama. Panama, when they played the U.S. at home, and I forget, did Panama play their first game at home also? And maybe that was part of their...
Say that again?
I'm going to give you Panama as an example of the anti-rotation philosophy.
No, Panama had played in El Salvador the week before the game prior.
Okay, so in El Salvador, then at home, they didn't rotate guys. So when Panama outplayed the U.S. and outran the U.S. and you know, outgritted the U.S. and all that in their home game against the United States, it was their second game for those guys. They hadn't rotated. Now, they did a little bit of rotation today heading into Canada, but I think now we're seeing the results of that. What's the score now? Is it 3-1?
It's a final in Canada. The Maple Leafs won 4-1.
So that shows
you
that
syrup.
You have to rotate some.
Yeah.
Because by the time you get to that third game, you get spanked 4-1.
You're absolutely right. But that's leads into a really interesting conversation about that rotation and where, look, if there is you and I have talked about this on the live show more times than I think I can count, which is it is without question the most important player in Berhalter's roster is Tyler Adams.
I agree 100%. When he's not on the field, it makes such a huge, when he's not playing holding mid, it makes a huge difference. He can be on the field, but if he's not the general there in the middle of the park, it makes such a huge difference. And, you know, remember the Panama game? It reminded the holes in the midfield, the space in the midfield, reminded me seriously of our over 40, over 50 games in soccer, but in old man soccer, Sunday soccer, right?
Sunday league,
yeah. And Adams, it just makes a huge difference in that regard. And if I ask you today, who was the man of the match? You wouldn't say Adams. I don't think I would say Adams. He was. You know, there weren't moments when you're like, but him being there, you just don't notice it. But it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah. Wow. I'm not sure. I hadn't really put any thought into who I think the man of the match today was. And if I wanted to be cool hipster guy, I would say Tyler Adams, just because that's what cool hipster
soccer guys. I think that would be a fair choice. It's like my point about center backs. When center backs have good games, you don't really notice it, right? Because they didn't make mistakes. Miles Robinson, he's such a steady Eddie.
Did you have somebody you thought was man of the match
today?
Well,
I thought Musa had a really good game today.
Yeah.
I thought the team played well in general. Yeah. I thought, you know, for the most part, they all played well.
You know, it was interesting because one of the oddities of all of this Berhalter regime is that if he has this golden four of Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Giovanni Reyna, and Christian Pulisic, he's never been able to field all four of those guys on the field at the same time for any of the games he's been head coach of this team. And who knows if that's ever going to be. It's one of the weird things I don't think we talk about enough, which is I assume Berhalter's best 11 includes those four guys in some formation that works. And the fact that he's not been able to put all four of them on, and in fact, the number of times he's even been able to put three of them on the field at the same time is relatively low. But today was interesting because we got Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, and Tyler Adams at the same time. And again, they're way younger and of a much higher pedigree and level than the Costa Rica midfield, I think. That part of it really showed in that long stretches of time where Costa Rica just could not get out of their own half of the field.
Yeah, it was the polar opposite of what we saw in Panama today with that midfield. It really was.
Yeah. You know, and the thing about the Panamanian game that really won it for Panama was those guys went in and never gave the United States an ounce of space, a chance to breathe on the ball, anything. As soon as an American player got the ball, there was a Panamanian, one or two of them, right up their butt. And they played hard, and they just outworked the United States. And I thought that was a big difference today, where Costa Rica was a little bit more, these guys are way faster and a little bit more respectful, and just the U.S. kind of turned the tide in terms of applying that pressure. And that was a big difference, between those two games.
Yeah, and Panama playing at home, you come out with a different energy. They're younger. They're a little bit more athletic, obviously, than Costa Rica. And I don't think the U.S. expected Panama to come out like that either. I think the U.S. went in a little bit thinking, you know, that we're a better team. Even though we're playing on the road, we're going to come out, we're going to possess. And it was not the start that they expected. And then Panama came off the gate like that. But the thing is, the difference between some of the guys that didn't play that game that we consider more of the A team with some of those that played in that game is that once that happened, once we saw Panama apply that kind of pressure and that kind of athleticism and speed, and they were slow in thinking and affected their trapping, their passing was bad. They just didn't react well to that. And you didn't even get energy. That's the thing is, yeah, like, at least you want some energy from the guys that are fresh.
Yeah, and that was the frightening thing about that, because that's not the only time this is going to happen to this team. I mean, while they have Mexico up next in Cincinnati, that's going to be a huge one. Imagine Ricardo Pepi starting against Mexico in World Cup qualifier. That's nuts. Then they have to travel to Jamaica for the next game, and I suspect Jamaica will play a little bit more aggressively in that game and kind of come after the United States. The U.S. still has to go to Canada.
Wait, no, I thought it was Canada. Yeah,
no, Canada's not till January 30th.
16th of November. Oh, okay.
The 16th of November is Jamaica. The next window is two games, as you said, which is U.S. Mexico, and then Jamaica hosting the U.S. And then it's the window after on the 27th of January. Yeah. The 30th of January, sorry, when U.S. has to go to Canada. I assume that game will be in Toronto. Is that correct?
I don't know if they've decided. No, they're going to take, they're going to play Mexico and Edmonton to get them up to the cold. I don't think they've decided where they're going to play the U.S. yet.
Good Lord,
the next window
cold.
Then
Good
is going to be tougher than this window.
You mean the November window?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Home. Yeah.
I mean,
U.S. Mexico.
Not in terms of. In terms of rotation, no, because it's only two games, but everybody has to deal with a 3-2, so that's all even. But and who you're going to play and where you're going to play them, hosting Mexico, that's hard, even though you're at home. And then going to Jamaica should be 3 points, but anything can happen, right? And those settings.
Well, look, nothing that happened today was going to seal anything for anybody, because there are 4 more windows, 3 of which are 3-game windows, and then this 2-game window that's coming up next. And this is just going to be continue to be difficult for everybody. Tonight, Mexico has to, as we were talking about earlier, Mexico's playing in El Salvador, which if there's ever a game where you think you actually question whether or not Mexico gets a win in a qualifier, that may be one of two, going to the United States and going to El Salvador, because the El Salvadorian fans are just so bonkers nuts about playing Mexico. That may be one where we'll see. That game kicks off shortly after, I guess it's a little before 9 o'clock, so it'll come up here in a little bit. So I don't know, man. I don't think this ever gets easier from here on out. That's for sure, does it?
No. But ultimately we're happy with the 6 points in this
window. Yeah. I mean,
if we head into the window, I know that everybody was hoping for 9 but at least 7, right? That was the talk. But 6 points is okay. I think that's good.
6 points is okay. Losing to Panama, even in Panama, was a little bit weird. But maybe there's some lessons in that that help this team out long term. If it helps Berhalter figure out the math of how to handle rotation in a 3-game window, and that's the cost of it is losing in Panama, then maybe there's mm-hmm. a long term benefit that we all, need to think about as we get through here. So at the end of the day, the U.S., prior to Mexico playing at El Salvador, sits at top of the table with 11 points and a goal differential of 5. Mexico is exactly the same, so whatever that result today will end up impacting it. Canada's big win, 4-1 over Panama, puts them a point behind the United States and Mexico with a goal differential of 5. That was a big result. That actually gave them a lot of help there. Panama now has a goal differential of 0 and sits on 8 points. Costa Rica in 5th with 6. El Salvador is in 6th with 5 points. And is the Jamaica-Honduras game still going on at this moment? It is. Where is it? It looks like they're somebody's winning 2-0 in that game. Where is it?
Yeah, Jamaica, so Jamaica's beating Honduras in Honduras.
In Honduras, 2-0. So again, you know what, Andy? That's a great. I think this is another example of just tired legs. I don't know what the lineups for those two teams are, but you just wonder if because Honduras got smoked by Mexico.
And this is where the depth comes in, and this is where the Mexico. I mean, we talk about the depth that Mexico has and the depth that the U.S. has. This is, these rotations is where we see it. And again, I personally don't fault, the rotation and if Berhalter likes the ABA rotation, fine. I just wish we would have seen more energy from the players in that B game. That's all. Rotation is important. We have to do it.
Yeah, agreed. Since you're the neutral observer, being Canadian and all, do you feel like I, as an American, or anybody listening to this podcast as American fans, should overall our level of our happy meter should be pointed mostly positive, correct? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, no doubt.
Okay.
You got your points at home. That's always the most. You didn't drop points at home. That's much worse than not getting a tie on the road.
Yeah.
Against a tough opponent, too.
That's true. Yeah, fair enough. So let's see, what was that result the other day? That was the one I wanted to ask you about, because Canada got the result in Mexico, which was huge.
Yes.
And then they went to Jamaica and got a result. And now they've won at home. So this was their difficult window where they had to go first 2 games on the road and then home, and they end up getting 5 points out of this window. You as a Canada fan have to be ecstatic about how your team is playing in this qualifying cycle.
Absolutely. And I'm a little bit more surprised maybe than I should have been, I guess. I mean, I learned from Buzz in one of our podcasts that Canada's actually got a decent side. I obviously follow the U.S. much more closely because of where I am, and I live here, and it's part of the industry I work in too. But I've followed Canada from a distance, but now I'm following more closely because they're actually a fun team to watch as well. They're not just getting results. They're kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, there's some interesting talent on that team, and the fact they've been playing together for as long as they have continues to pay off. That is a team that is the sum of its parts, I think, is a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
They're really, really good. Okay, so the USA ends the cycle with 6 points, not 7 or 9, but that's okay. They're going to end up no worse than second in the group as we move into the next one again. The next game is the big one at home against Mexico. That game will be played in Cincinnati, not Columbus. I'm still not sure why that's not being played in Columbus.
Just for all time's sake? Is that why you're thinking that or what?
Yeah. Why didn't they play the Costa Rica game in Cincinnati today and let the U.S.-Mexico game happen in Columbus? Because that's really, I don't know. I just think there's value in kind of repeating that thing. That becomes a mental thing, I think.
Yeah, and it's not going to be any colder in Cincinnati than it would have been in Columbus, right?
No,
on the 12th of November.
I wouldn't think so. I don't know. But by the way, that new Columbus Stadium is awesome. It looks so good.
Yeah, it does look nice. Yeah, I've heard good things about it from people that have been.
And by all reports, the Cincinnati Stadium is even nicer.
Oh wow, I haven't been to that one.
Yeah.
Is that a road trip? No, we can't do that. You were there at the Dos Acero in Columbus, right?
Yes, I was. My friend Mike Elliott and I were at the original Dos Acero game in 2001. I still have my ticket stub that I hold near and dear to my heart. So.
Are you going on the 12th of November?
No, we're not.
Oh.
I wish. No. Did you just boo me?
Yeah.
Where are you?
Tradition.
Are you going up to the? Are you going up for the Canada Mexico game on the 16th?
Am I going to Edmonton? No, I'm not going to Edmonton. But I do hope it snows a lot that day.
Boy, I'm telling you, you were mentioning how they took them to Edmonton. That game is in November. The U.S. Canada game, January 30th.
Yeah, but it's not like you're going to take Canada to somewhere cold and get home field advantage, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes?
In
That's
Canada?
What the U.S. does to Mexico.
Why, it'll be brutal cold in the end of January in some random place in Canada.
Manitoba.
Yeah, Manitoba.
Winnipeg.
What is that? Is it New Brunswick? What is that
New
called?
Brunswick.
New
yeah.
Brunswick, yeah, whatever. Yeah. The Arctic line.
Best oysters. New Brunswick oysters are the best oysters. Do you eat oysters, Peter? Let's talk a little cooking.
I do. I love a good
You do?
Raw.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
boy,
very good.
I love
I'm glad to find
oysters.
We're going to have to go and do oysters one day.
New England upper coast. Oh,
yes, absolutely. The best.
I used to sit in a bar in Lubbock, Texas when I was in school and eat Gulf oysters.
No, not as good. Come
no,
on.
Not as good. And then suddenly learned about brain fungus or bacteria
right.
and the dangers of that. And then realized maybe
death.
I should. Yeah, death. Yes. I stopped doing it.
Correct.
Man, Andy, I'm looking forward to getting back live on the radio, doing the Kick Around Live this Saturday at 2 on the Ticket. We haven't done it now in almost 3 weeks. Can you believe that?
I hope I don't get lost going up to the studio. It's been a while.
Yes, it appears that Manchester United have caught a bit of the Liverpool center back disease. I don't know if you've heard that.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, their two starting center backs are hurt now. So.
Oh, that breaks my heart. We're going to talk a little Champions League too, because they play.
Yeah.
We pick up Champions League next week also.
Yes, so. I would love to talk some Champions League. All right. Thank you, Andy. We will speak to you on Saturday. And thank you, P1s. We love and adore you. Go on out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s.